Welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 324, coming at you on a Thursday night to Pockets of ADP Part 4, ADP 200 through 250. We're going to cover for you, talking hitters, pitchers, stats, positions, you name it. We'll got you covered through that pocket. We'll talk some news. Royce Lewis, and much, much more. But first off, you can find me on Twitter at BDN, Trick the Podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at Bubba at Patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Off to a roaring start. A Royce Lewis vent, a stutter. It's only going to go up from here, right? This episode.
That's what they say.
I'm good, man. Just wrapped up Listener League number 9 this evening. Thank you to Spencer Thurmond for streaming that one. We got one more to go. Friday Night Lights. Lucas Beery is going to stream that one. I will be over at Papa Bloom's place, who was in the last auction, monitoring things there. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, otherwise, doing good, man. Last show of February. It's March next time. So
yep, we are
coming hot and heavy.
The regular season starts a month from tonight, March 26th. Yep. The Giants and the Yankees will be on Netflix because that's how you grow the game. But that'll be taking place out the gate. So
another vent there. So that's number 2. So we'll keep a count.
We'll be back from Vegas. We'll do our share show on Tuesday, and then we'll talk real baseball that Thursday night, previewing the week in Fab. So it'll be a go time around these neck of the woods. You're gonna have a blast at your dad's house. It sounds like you're gonna be tech support potentially. So it's gonna be really nice over there for you. Make sure you bring your IT skills and your bourbon to take care of all of that.
I will need the latter for sure. Tech support, emotional support, maybe even fantasy advice, unless it's Royce Lewis related, of course. But yeah, it'll be a good time.
Your dad's gonna draft him now, don't you worry. That will be happening. Andy Splinter says number 9 was a doozy, referring to League 9. And Dustin Anderson says he's feeling the cynicism. Yes. No, we're just a fun bunch around here these days. And it's because of some of the news and notes we got. But before we get to that, this upcoming episode, Tuesday, next episode we'll be bringing to you guys will not be the fifth pocket of ADP. That'll be next Thursday. We're taking a small break on Tuesday, March 3rd, 8 Eastern, 5 Best Coast. Different time for you guys. Probably about 5 minutes before that is where we'll go, but Tout Wars, Ryan, myself, head to head once again. It's gonna be awesome. We got a draft order tonight, and it's my third year in this league, so looking forward to it.
Head to head, and against 13 other people, but yeah, you're gonna be drafting fifth. I'm gonna be drafting 14th. We kind of planned it that way via KDS, though I should note that I had first choice of KDS of the two of us as I finished higher in the standings last year. But that's going to be a fun stream, man. 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, both in the same draft. It's not just everyone piling on me. It's you all actually get a chance to pile on Bubba as well. So I'm sure there'll be plenty of good trash talk with that. So very much looking forward to that. If you all are interested in that, Tout Wars is an OBP league. So that's one that's going to be actually very different shift of mindset for that one draft. But other than that, it's pretty consistent with 15 team mixed drafts that we've been doing all draft season. So check us out on Tuesday. That's one of the highlights of the year, streaming that one with you / against you at the same time. So it'll be good.
Yeah, it's one of the only leagues that we're both in. It is the OBP factor changes a lot of it, to your point. And just, the trash talking is almost more entertaining than any player analysis you're going to get throughout that draft. And do our best to entertain you for 3 hours, 3.5 hours or so. And it'd be the best place to watch it in town. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, this will be the third year. Because remember, the first year was your Brandon Fott typo fiasco. Remember that?
Oh, dude. Yeah, Fantrax. Now we're back on Fantrax.
I don't think it was Fantrax. I think it was user error.
No, that was a Fantrax error. I had to reload the page and then he showed up.
All right, so this is the type of thing you guys will get on Tuesday. Very much looking forward.
It's the only other time we draft on something besides basically NFBC or you do RT Sports for labor. Yeah, so this also throws mass, like the ADP will be so different. There'll be a lot of levels to this thing. Because Ryan will probably reorganize his stuff prior, like a smart person. I'll probably open up the draft room for the first time as we.
I was just going to ask, what is your strategy change with OBP, Bubba? How's that affecting your dollar valuations for the draft?
I every year I just go into FanGraphs and I use like kind of their auction calculator or something, but I use OBP instead, so it just ranks them differently for me. It's got to get an idea on how that benefits them. Just for my mind, because I know the rest of the stats with these players. So it just kind of reorganizes things for me, and I just go from there. I don't overthink it too much because, yes, OBP is a big, it's one of the five categories of my point. It's one of the five, and it's a standalone league. So if I'm too focused on OBP, you will ruin other parts of your draft.
I have been guilty of that in the past.
Yes. And as Dustin says in the chat, promo code Bubba Fantrax will be available never. But yes, that's coming your way, everybody. Good start. All right. Let's get after it. Some news and notes for you as Ryan
is the camera following me now.
Yeah, it called you the whole time. That thing's gonna get you in trouble one day, Ryan. Get you a lot of trouble one day.
Swap this thing out, man.
Yeah, it's gonna get you in a lot of trouble someday. All right, some news and notes here. Max Scherzer re-signs with the Toronto Blue Jays 1-year deal. As Mark said, the camera followed this bit. yes. But Max Scherzer's back with the Jays. This makes things a little interesting. It's a 1-year, like $3 million deal, but with incentives, I can get up to like 10 or 15 million. It's like every 30 innings, he gets another $1 million, roughly, something along those lines. Now the question is, when will he be ready? They're saying this could be a 6-man rotation. They're also saying, like, there's Barrios, there's, the Treya Savage monitoring. Does Cody Ponce, good enough? Lots of questions to be answered still that have not been answered yet is what I'm trying to get at. But Scherzer will get his day in the sun to join the Yankees.
The Blue Jays, right?
Sorry, Blue Jays, yes. Okay. I got distracted. I'm still distracted by your camera.
I'm the one who can't figure out who's on what team, so just wanted to make sure there. You're throwing me off. And, I've got water everywhere, so it's one of those nights. Not much you can do with Scherzer. Like, this doesn't – Scherzer, I don't know if it's – I guess if we knew Scherzer would start the year in the rotation, he's draftable. Like, the skills weren't horrible last year. It was a 16% K to walk, decent ball rates. Like an okay swing strike rate for a skill set that is obviously in decline. But since we don't know when he's going to start, like I don't think he can draft Scherzer in a fab league. But in a draft and hold, if you're still doing draft and holds at this point, it makes sense. It's someone who presumably will be healthy and can give your rotation a shot in the arm 2 months, 3 months into the season when presumably other starters go down. So that is an avenue for king of the old, Max Scherzer.
Yep. No, it's an avenue in the deeper form, as to your point. Like, I looked at the auction. Like, should I take him in the reserve rounds? Maybe. I think there's better options still.
Yeah. Unless he starts on open or is in the opening day rotation. He's just not stash worthy, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think it's a major thing in that regard. But what could be a major thing is Royce Lewis. After you and I professed our love for Royce recently, was scratched from his Grapefruit League game on Thursday with tightness in his side. They said under an abundance amount of caution, Ryan. So, in my brain, I'm trying to be optimistic here and going, they're just being cautious. It's like you said, it's February 26th. What's the point? Like, why rush this? He had a combo meal the other day. Like, things are looking good with Royce right before the show, maybe 20 minutes before the show. Royce Lewis to undergo MRI. And in my brain, I'm thinking, precaution requires an MRI. Is this really precaution or what's going on? I have a lot more questions now.
Right. And even if it comes, obviously by the time you probably listen to this, maybe we'll know. So this will be a little bit dated, but even if the MRI comes back clean, this is a big step back because like you and me were both just saying a couple days ago on not one, but two different podcasts. Sorry, Eric Cross, our guest appearance on the Tool Shed. We said, Royce Lewis had 9 steals in September. He's stealing in spring training. Right now he's healthy. And if Royce Lewis is healthy, we really like Royce Lewis. And then that all gets wiped out, I think, by this. And again, we'll see what the MRI says. But this is just deja vu all over again and a firm reminder of why Royce Lewis is going so late. But for me, yeah, all hinges on the health, and it doesn't look healthy. So that's kind of a, it was, I think, I forget who in the Discord said, I bolded him and then I just unbolded him in my sheet. And that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, Royce is one of those players you just write down with a pencil at all times, because that eraser can come into play. That's the way it goes. But I'm still trying to be optimistic here. I still think there's a very good player there. But, man, did that set things back real quick. Britton Doyle, another guy we love, Ryan. He was, you know, scratched the other day with a sore shoulder, a sore wrist, basically. You know, precaution again. Well, he had an MRI on Thursday. They're still awaiting the results of said MRI. But, again, another precaution situation resulting in MRI doesn't – this one kind of worries me all of a sudden.
Sure. Right. And to the point where it's, I mean, we mentioned on our last show, I mean, we covered Britton Doyle. I guess we're kisses of death here. Whoever we talk about and whoever we pump up gets hurt right now. But we mentioned that the last pocket where Britton Doyle's going, there's a lot of other good outfielders. And I think we did the Britton Doyle, Dylan Cruz comparison. There's Taylor Ward going right there, Brendan Nimmo going right there, Stephen Kwan, a few others, Alec Burleson. Like, just take one of those guys instead right now until we know what's going on with Britton Doyle. Like, if you're drafting in the next couple of days, if everything comes out okay with Britton Doyle, then I still really like him, of course. But this wrist injury / imaging is not good news for sure.
Nope, not at all. The Giancarlo Stanton news just continues to make me chuckle. It's just some of the weirdest stuff on the face of the planet. You know, tennis elbow in both elbows last year. He missed like half the season almost, but then he came back and mashed, just destroyed baseballs all over the place. He's getting a slow ramp up to spring. Supposed to be in action next week, maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, they're saying. But then on Thursday, reports come out that his elbows are so bad, he can't open a bag of chips or open like a jar of, let's say, pickles or something like that. It is beyond bizarre what's going on there, right? Can you open stuff with your bad elbow?
I can, but I can also honestly see where I can.
Yeah, you can feel like you did. When you heard this, did you test it out for a second?
No, I open bags of chips all the time. I've actually been trying to go low carb this year, but that was the most surprising news. Was Giancarlo Stanton eats chips? That guy hasn't eaten a carb in his entire life.
Yeah. They eat those high protein chips that are out there now.
Maybe they do have those.
They're
quite shaky. Yeah. But I mean, it just sounds like this is not going away. And honestly, as someone who honestly I have tennis elbow in my left arm right now, I've had it for like 3 months and it's kind of the same. It hasn't gotten any better. I don't rest it. I just keep doing stuff, which is probably not great, but Stanton probably does too. And it just lingers. And I don't know, from a fantasy standpoint, I also saw like they're going to give him regular rest, and like that's the death knell.
They did that last year though too, when he still put up those monster numbers.
I don't know. That concerns me. That concerns me if you're getting regular rest even when you're healthy. So I don't know. You like Stanton more than I do, but this is not good.
No, it's extremely terrifying. I'm not gonna act like it's not, but to me, I'm just taking him for the ceiling, because like you mentioned the days off, but we also went back and said, even though we knew he was going to probably play every other day and play at max 4 games a week, his production was still better than almost anybody you could stream. Like, he was still just an absolute beast. And that was maybe his 90th percentile performance, so I might just be speaking completely out of my rear end. But I'm still intrigued. Like, if he comes out here and he shows he can hit, play it every other day in spring, still kind of interested, not gonna lie. So I just think that prowess is pretty good. So we'll see how that goes. As Dustin in the chat says, it's the people's elbow. That's what if he's gonna lay the smack down on somebody. All right, some Josh Hader news. He played this was weird. He played catch off a mound but didn't throw off a mound. Basically didn't throw a bullpen. He just made sure he was elevated, I guess, and played catch with someone to see, I guess, maybe if that motion downhill affected him at all. It was weird kind of reading. And they said that went well with their zero timetable for him to actually start ramping up. So this is really feeling like a for sure IL situation to start the year, Ryan. And it might be like a month or so before we see him into the season. It feels like it's not good at all.
That's what it feels like. And with the potential of it being much worse than that, right?
They're taking it really slow.
Yeah. And I mean, they probably should, but it is Josh Hader. Like, you do want to make sure he's good to go. And if you need to miss a month, that's fine. But I just worry about the worst case scenario there, which seems to be somewhat increasing in likelihood. So pretty much universally now, I know in our last few listener league auctions, Brian Abreu has been going for more than Josh Hader. And I can get behind that at this point, given the updates and the lack of real progress that we've seen with Josh Hader.
Yep. Just wanted to bring that out. And to your point, if you are coming up in drafts, I'm starting to see the appeal of a little more aggressiveness on a Brian Abreu. I've always liked the idea of getting him, but he got priced up real quick, so I kind of just stayed away. I'm starting to see where it's worth maybe going after at this point in time. This one bummed me out also. Josh Jung. He's one of those late third basemen, which I didn't mind taking shots on if he really wanted to punt the position, or like in DCs, I loved him as like a second, third baseman or something. And again, this is a precautionary removal right now, but it's a hamstring injury for Josh Jung. He was scratched out of precaution for his hamstring. I just bring it up because there's always something with Josh Jung. Like, it really sucks because he's also a guy that we've seen the quality of contact still be very good when he plays, but the consistent playing time has not been there.
Story of his career, which sucks. But Josh Jung has not been on my radar for this draft season. Maybe he should have been, but just cannot stay healthy. It's brutal.
Yep, it's very, very brutal. Munetaka Murakami was scratched with general soreness. They want to let him get healed up before he takes off for the WBC, was the words they said. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that just yet. Samuel Basayo. This one might be the most concerning one of the bunch here. I haven't seen anything official on what took place here, but there was a play at the plate in Thursday's game, and he was removed from the game and visibly shaken. Like, things were not good, but they're calling it right side abdominal discomfort after he made a sweeping tag. That's an oblique, Ryan. I hate to break it to people. They're sugarcoating things right now because he's probably getting an MRI. But see, here's where things feel different. We witnessed him hurt himself playing where other guys are precaution. That is probably, like, I feel worse about the Basayo deal.
And I saw you made a comment, I think today in the Discord, that if Basayo misses time, Adley somewhat becomes a little more appetizing. Am I putting words in your mouth?
Appealing.
Appealing. Appealing. Yes. Appetizing. I mean, appetizers.
Big difference
appealing.
For a fat guy. Big difference. But I say that just because, yes, Adley's price isn't crazy expensive in the catcher's market. It's around 150. Like, he's gone as high as 117 over the last 4 12-team drafts. We'll see where it goes. Like, if it starts climbing up the list again, I'm not going to be too excited. But if he still camps out at like 140, 150, and if you're aggressive on catcher, now he's a catcher two, okay, I'm in. Like, I still don't know if I stomach him as a catcher one just because he has to accumulate in his – like, to me, it's a 260, 20 home runs. Like, it's a good stat line. It is, but there's a lot of that you can get with some upside down below.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, the biggest thing with those two is just playing time. I know one can DH, the other can catch, but I don't think it's a primary DH. I think they're going to rotate. They've got other bodies that need some reps. So that's been the biggest thing all draft season, I think, for both of us. So
yep.
If one of them's out of the picture, the playing time comes a little bit better. Still don't love Adley, but that part at least gets safer.
Yep, agreed. A couple bits of Merrill Kelly news today. He flat out said he was offered a 3-year deal with the Padres, but because of taxes in California, he declined it. Don't blame you, Merrill.
What?
Yeah, he had a lot more to say. He said, if I sign for 3 years deal, I'd basically be getting paid for a year and a half. And I'm like, you're not wrong. So, like, that was pretty funny to me. And it's just funny hearing someone else say it besides a California that's kind of bitter about it. But we know Merrill Kelly was scratched recently from his back injury. And now, the MRI didn't show anything too crazy. They seemed pretty normal. Originally, they were going to say start the year on the IL. Now he's still going to potentially, because now they're saying the way he's ramping up is he might only miss one start. He might not be like a long stint on the IL. So in my mind, again, this is all just hope, but where you're paying for Merrill Kelly, if he only misses one start, I still like the price tag basically.
Yeah, agreed. It's just at this point, we don't know if it actually is one start or not. So yeah. I don't know. He's moving down my board a little bit, just in old with back issues. Just not ideal, not a good combination in anything.
It's relatable. But yeah, and again, just so people know, a lot of this news, it's kind of good that we have just a bunch of speculation news anyways, but we got to bring it up just to get it out there. I want to mention Brandon Pfaadt. He's dealing with a side issue that took place during the offseason. The wordage, he's dealing with a minor side issue that took place this offseason. He's asymptomatic, which I've never heard used for a side issue, through a live BP session on Thursday. Should be fine in his progression, but is getting slow played to the extent. I'd be shocked if Pfaadt's ready to start the season, is my point.
It's like, how many words can we type in a PR statement and say nothing?
That was the coach's quote during the press conference. That's why I had to read it. I'm like,
that's great.
Let me read you this word salad here that came from Tori Lavello here.
Yeah, word salad's the good way to put that.
So I don't know if you have any thoughts on Brandon Pfaadt, but he's getting slow played. So that Arizona rotation's getting pretty murky real quick.
Yeah, that's probably one of the bigger takeaways. It's like, that rotation could be really bad if Pfaadt wasn't that great himself last year, so I mean, who the hell knows? But the rotation depth for Arizona is pretty bad. And as we start to, in a month from now, twist our minds from drafting for season long to making roster decisions by week and looking at schedules, on my early radar, hitters that are facing Arizona that could be a damn good thing this year.
That could be a very, very good thing this year, the way things are going. And the last bit of news I have here, there it is. Dave Roberts said Mookie Betts won't play in a game before Sunday, and it might not be until early next week. So the earliest he'll play is Sunday. He wanted Mookie to start a little bit later as far as not getting into spring training ready to go and kind of use spring training to build up. He didn't want him to come to camp ready. He wanted to use spring to build him up for the season, basically because of all the stuff he went through last year. Do with that information as you wish.
I think we're overanalyzing this. if we're reading too much into it, in my opinion, I could be wrong. We all know about the illness last year with Mookie Betts. You have to gain that weight back somehow, and you can't really do it during the season. And so, I mean, Mookie Betts is a veteran. Maybe they're hiding an injury. I have no idea, but taking this report at face value, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, Dodgers reporting. Dave Roberts, baby. Dave Roberts at his finest. Never take it at face value.
I know that's your guy, but I'll take him at his word for now. For now.
Yeah. Okay. That wraps up our speculative news and notes. Most guys are asymptomatic, apparently. Haven't heard that word since 2020.
Been 5 years, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I just laughed when I saw that quote. That's why I had to read it out loud. I'm like, interesting. Interesting choice of words. But, all right, what are we looking at tonight, Ryan? Pocket of ADP, part 4.
All right, same deal as the last few. We've got our pitchers and hitters here. We're taking a look at this part of the draft across all positions to kind of help you guys get an idea of what we like or don't like at certain stages of the draft. We've got projections that are color coded. We've got hitters and pitchers separated out for those of you viewing on YouTube, and we'll just kind of go through it. For me, so I'll always start with the closers because that's always the easiest. And this is going to change, but so this is looking at February 12 team drafts on the NFBC. Sir Anthony Dominguez is your quote unquote top closer here at an ADP of 210, which I feel is right. He signed before February, right?
Yes.
Or maybe not. I don't know. So that feels like a legit 210 ADP. Robert Suarez and Brian Abreu are the other two. And those are the only closers. And Robert Suarez is not a closer. So they're going at 220 and 223, though that Brian Abreu note, given what we just talked about with Josh Hader at the top, he has gone as early as 150. 153 in a recent 12-team NFBC draft. So Brian Abreu, as the news on Hader keeps getting worse or stays the same, I guess is the better way to put it. Brian Abreu is getting pricier. So really, there's one reliever I think you could even target here, and that's Sir Anthony Dominguez at 210. And so just keep at him. Like, you're screwed if you don't get Dominguez and you need closers at this point.
Yeah, he's one of the last ones, and I'm kind of surprised his ADP is still bad. I know when you made the list and everything, but he's another one because, like, I'll be in a draft, and then someone will throw him out. And I'm like, oh, dude, I thought we had time on that one. I guess everyone starts to realize this is it. This is, like, unless you're waiting on the Riley O'Briens and the specking on the Kevin Ginkles and that kind of stuff. This is the last stand, folks.
Yeah. And no, this, I just pulled up in our ADP tracker, which pulls every draft every day. The last
on the Patreon.
On the Patreon, of course. Support the show. Support the boys. 238 in the most recent draft for Stranthony Dominguez. 199, wow. 194, 200, 213, 208 were his last six. So that's a pretty, that's where Stranthony Dominguez has settled. And I like that price quite a bit.
It's a great price. If it settles there, it's a great price. It just shows you that I'm in the high priced auctions and in the high priced snake drafts. It's awesome. Good times in these parts. But this is the end of the road, as Boyz II Men once said, for the closing situation. What else are you looking at?
I assume that was a Boyz II Men song.
Yes. Yes. If, I don't think you guys want me to start singing it, but I had most of their CDs as I grew up because, you know, I have a lot of soul like that.
All right. Starting pitchers. This is an interesting pocket for starting pitchers. I feel like this is a pretty big drop off compared to the last group. You've got the injury guys that you just hope to stay healthy. You've got like your Shane McClanahan, Joe Musgrove, Chris Bubich all going next to each other, like between 210 and 220. You've got these like quote unquote safe, and I don't even know if safe is the right word, but these safe volume guys like Aaron Nola, like Jack Flaherty, like Zach Gallen, that yes, they give you volume, but what is the quality of such volume? And then you've got just kind of like wild card. Bryce Miller's another injury risk guy. Wild cards in terms of, I would say Shane Boz is a wild card in terms of what he can do. Roki Sasaki is in this group, a wild card. Shane Bieber, injury guy. Ryan Weathers, injury risk. Like there's just major, major warts with the starting pitcher group here. So this, I ideally by pick 200 want to have a good chunk of my rotation filled out here, because these are kind of more speculative plays than guys that I want to be depending on in my rotation.
Agreed. There's only a couple I like here. One of your targets is one of mine as well. I didn't put it down cause you did, but he's at the top of the 200s basically. So it kind of doesn't even almost count. This range 2 to 250 is not a pitching range for me unless I'm drowning and I start trying to take the volume guys, as you mentioned, or I take a shot on a Jack Leiter or something. There's on the upside of a Jack Leiter, there's not a lot I like here at all.
Do you, in general, not talking specific players, like which type of pitcher would you rather take in this group? That injury risk guy with the high ceiling, or the Aaron Nola, Jack Flaherty, who throws 160, 200 innings if you're Nola every year, but it could be very dicey.
The more I play and do like end of season reviews with you or like a Steve O'Swervey or some others, I want the high upside guy here, because when you start getting past pick 200, most of these guys aren't even on your roster when the season's over. If they are, you pretty much hit gold is what it comes down to. So that's why as draft season goes along, I'm like, I'm still not a Bryce Miller fan, but I get it. I get it here. Cause if he does find some like a slimmer of that old form, that's a heck of a price tag. That's why I love Jack Leiter and stuff like that. Like, you know, Shane McClanahan's price isn't going to sit here much longer, but he's about to throw in a spring game next week. If he throws well because his bullpens have looked good, that price is going to fly up. So that window will close, to your point. But this is where you take your chances, I think, before you just go boring and inconsistent.
Yeah, I think my two cents is certainly in a 12, I think you take this more at a 12 team brain. I think definitely in a 12 and a 15, you still need these picks. Like 250, pick 250 in a 15 teamer is a mid-teens round pick. So these are still somewhat building block type picks. But I don't know. You're right. I say every season review that the key to winning these leagues is hitting on these breakouts in the middle round, and that needs to be probably a shift in my thinking in these fab leagues to kind of take those shots at this point.
Yeah, because like I know I don't want to like just turn the whole show into that. I guess it's a good question. Just like a strategy point is, you look at all these guys that are super successful, especially like in overall competitions, they're taking all kinds of shots in these ranges because they're like, screw it, I'll just fab it out if I have to, or I'll play that game. Like they build such a good base early most of the time where this is where they start swinging, and it makes a ton of sense because this is where like you would have got your Eovaldi in the past, your Robbie Ray's in the past, stuff like that would have obviously game changer type players. Yep.
All right, what's your take on the hitting side of this group?
The hitting side of the group, it is what it is.
that is correct.
it's a lot of red, man. It's starting to dissipate. Like there's still a lot of 20 home runs. A lot of 20 home run guys, which is good. You still have a few steals guys, which isn't bad, but it's like I'm not taking Caballero. But like the bus drivers, they're like there's a handful of guys I like in this range. I think it's a good range for middle infield if you want to take a middle infielder. Or if you punted second base, this is a good second base range, is what I would say. There's a handful of those guys that I really like. There's only a few of them on the table. It's Otto Lopez and Luis Garcia, basically, but I wouldn't mind either one of those if you punted the position, is my point. I could walk away with that. But, yeah, overall, this is it's a heavy outfield range again, and it's not a lot of quality outfielders. They're still not quite in Platoonsville yet, though. So right. This is where you kind of want to wrap up your outfield if you can, is what I would say.
Agreed on your middle infield take as well. Dustin in the chat said this is where to draft second base and middle as well. Like Ezekiel Tovar is going near the top. I like his projection at least versus the price. Xander Bogart's also going at pick 240. Gotta like that. So and then the bus driver, as you mentioned. So yeah, a decent spot, decent options for middle infield. I think in terms of categories, you're right. Like power is the one that's still kind of hanging on here. Like looks like almost just eyeballing this chart, probably half these players are projected to hit for over 20 home runs. So yep. That's something to kind of tuck away is you can get power here. There are power hitters in this 200 to 250 tier. Now, of course, right, this late in the draft, it's going to cost you elsewhere. These are usually very low stolen base power guys or, you know, batting average, Colson, Crickets, Montgomery type batting averages where he's projected to hit 220 to go with those 23 home runs. So again, everyone has warts here, but in terms of just like general supply on the category side, to me, power is much more plentiful than it is stolen base. There's only four or five stolen base guys projected for over like 15 steals. And like you said, one of them is Caballero, which rabbit, Otto Lopez, Caleb Durbin, Jordan Beck, Xander Bogaerts, Luis Garcia, kind of all projected. None of them to 20 steals, but over 15 at least. So you've got a few options, but seems like, and I've noticed this in drafts too, just seems like steals. Like I have a hard time getting steals in these middle rounds. And looking at this board, this is why.
Well, and the thing is that it's really telling, especially between this round and when we do the next pocket next Thursday, because we'll be streaming Tout Wars live on Tuesday night at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. Is if you do get steals in this range, like to your point, is it really hurts you elsewhere? Like, guys want to echo that sentiment because that's one thing when I was doing my barf draft, just kind of like playing the game and trying to keep things balanced. It's almost like at a point, you just have to say, screw it. I guess I'm punting saves. And we're going to approach that on the waiver wire because it will hurt the rest of your squad, where at least some of these power bats, if you're taking them, like Kerry Carpenter still projected at 250, you know, Elliot Ramos still projected at 255. And in this range, just another thing for the power, we're looking at projections. Like, if we believe in Sal Stewart, he's only projected for 18. I think if Stewart plays a full year, I think we all sit back and take 25 plus. Caglione's 18. We think Cag's going to hit a bunch if we believe in Cag. If you're drafting Cags, you're believing he's hitting closer to 30, not 18. Let's just be real about that conversation.
Because, dude, look at his projection is horrendous. It's all red. It's
like if you're drafting him, you just punt that projection. Like if you believe in Cags, if you're drafting Cags, you do not believe the projections. What it comes down to.
Correct.
I'm just pointing that because there's that one. Barger looks like his playing time is going to get a lot better. So over 18 homers, probably safe. If Isak Paredes gets traded over 19, is like my point is there's even more power under the projections that could burst out where steals is not going to burst out anywhere. That's where I was going with that. So. Because, you know, early on players that are great, projections are probably pretty good. Ben and I went over this every season, off season, because, you know, you kind of have a track record with these players. These players' track records aren't great. That's why they're drafted where they are. And so the projections have a lot more, you know, I don't know what your statistical term, variance is the word I would go with.
Yeah,
so that's something else you can look at here. Like when we use our team trackers for the draft, yeah, they're valuable. They're helpful. This is also a world where you can kind of be like, okay, you know, I think person, like your biases will come into play, of course, but there's arguments that you can make if to support your cause, essentially, is what I'm trying to get at.
I got you. That you have gotten there.
Yeah, well, I get there once in a while. Any other thoughts on this pocket before we start some ADP debates?
Not really. There's a couple decent batting average guys. I guess we haven't talked about batting average, but there's a couple decent batting average guys that aren't just batting average. So you've got like five or six guys projected to hit over 260. So you got Daylan Lyles, Sal Stewart, Tovar, Otto Lopez, Xander Bogaerts, and Luis Garcia. A lot of those guys at least do something else. So it's these guys aren't going to, like, if you're in a batting average hole, you pick these guys, it's, you know, it's not going to get you out of said hole. But there are certainly some options that won't hurt you at batting average, and they do other things too. So I just wanted to throw that one out there as well.
Yes, totally agree. And yeah, I'll just leave it at that. We'll talk about a lot of these players between the debates and the targets. But there's a lot of back of the starting roster hitters that I wouldn't mind here, where the pitchers are way more volatile. Yep. So that's kind of my final thoughts I'll make here before ADP debate. So Bloomfield, you got a couple menage a trois going here. So let's start with your hitting menage a trois. Yep. And what do you got?
Yep. So again, these ADP debates aren't really just us debating these players. This is just, I think, similar type player, similar position, whatever, going roughly around the same price that kind of catches our eye. And to what we were talking about earlier, the kind of a late middle infield source with this pocket is kind of nice. So my first debate, battle, whatever, is between Otto Lopez, Xander Bogaerts, and Luis Garcia. Otto Lopez going at pick 230, Xander Bogaerts at 241, Luis Garcia at pick 243. So all basically the same price. I'll kind of give you something a little bit different. I think Xander Bogaerts, of course, is your most stable, like, boring old. However, I mean, Xander Bogaerts is also coming off a 20 stolen base season, hit 263 last year, like actual decent production still. This isn't just someone you're kind of plugging in there and isn't doing anything for you. So I think that's probably your stable option. Luis Garcia, I want to like Luis Garcia. I like Luis Garcia. I worry about the playing time cap. I worry about the platoon. For some reason, I can't get over that. And maybe I should at a price of 243 because the skills are quite good. The projection here in partial playing time, assuming a platoon, is 15 homers, 14 steals, 260 bat. Like, this could be a 2020 bat that with a good batting average. I finally coming around.
Fuck, it only took his ADP to drop. It took his ADP to drop to you to finally say it.
What was about to explode? Like,
I'm glad I don't have one of your cameras.
Yeah, you're gonna end up on one of my deals here, man. And may get first base eligibility on top of second base, so that could help too. But it's hard to break out, have a true breakout when you are either not playing against lefties or are pretty bad against lefties. And then I think the highest overall ceiling is probably Otto Lopez, but also packs, I think, a nice floor to go with that. So, I mean, to kind of wrap this up, like, I'm happy with all three. And if all three go at the same price, like, I think this is a perfect spot to just kind of pencil in. I can get my late middle infielder at pick 230, and sure, one of these guys is going to go above that, maybe two of them, but probably not all three. And that's been a big thing that I've kind of been saying this draft season, is you don't want to kind of look at these pockets and, like, hinge on one player being available to you at one pick. Even if you pick them around early, you never know what's going to happen in your draft. But if you got three options, pretty good chance you can get one of them. And I think this is a very good kind of spot to get that middle infielder.
Yeah, Otto Lopez has been a very popular target of mine for a few reasons. You mentioned that floor, but I think there's a ceiling. Like, at worst, if he goes 15-15 like he did last year, I'm pumped. I think we've seen him go with power one year and speed another. Like, we've seen him do it all. I think there's a 2020 guy in there, and there's not a massive platoon. He's got second base shortstop eligibility, which to me is tremendous as well. Unlike these other two, like, you got, when you're doing your draft, we kind of talk about it. We'll review it in a few weeks when we do some other draft stuff, not positional reviews. But it's like we talk about, what's your middle infield? Okay, at second base and in my reserves, I want to get a shortstop. Well, now, if your middle infield's a second and a short, that changes things for you in your reserve rounds. Like, you can ignore middle infield, or you can attack the best option at middle infield, not specifically best position at middle infield. That's way more important than I think people realize when you're going through the reserve rounds to kind of round out your team. Not everybody follows that order, but if you're someone that sticks to that, that's big in my opinion. So I like Otto Lopez for many, many reasons. Luis Garcia Jr. have always loved, still love, have drafted him a few times at this price. This price is great. I will mention the last two seasons, each season he has played more games than Xander Bogaerts has played. So that has been a plus, even with the platoon, because Xander's getting hashtag old. He's going to be 34 this year. He's had the consistent wrist injuries and other injuries. Like, he wasn't supposed to come back at one point, and he still did. So the power has diminished. It's been 15 or fewer home runs in three out of the last 4 years, where we've seen 16 and 18 home runs the last 2 years from Luis Garcia. The speed's been a shocker with Xander. Like, I just did not see that one coming. And he hits for average, but Luis hits for a decent average as well. I think Xander is, if you just want to kind of pencil in a minimum, like 11 home runs, maybe 15 with steals, you're good. I think if you go in more of a ceiling play, it's Luis Garcia. Heck, his floor is probably equal or better than Xander. I'll take Garcia over Xander. So to me, it's Otto, it's Garcia, it's Xander, and we'll go from there.
Didn't even mention JJ Weatherholt too here too. He's going right after these guys, and that's the ultimate low ceiling, high ceiling, low floor play.
He's amazing to me, not just because he's a good player, but all the Connor Griffin hubbub, all the Kevin McGonigal hubbub. JJ Weatherholt has basically had a job for over a month, unless he just completely poops the bed in spring training, and his ADP is just chilling. It blows my mind every time when every tweet you see these guys, and you see the McGonigal gets a couple of tweets a day. Griffin gets 1,500 a day, especially now with Cardi involved. But Weatherholt gets like nothing, and he's still just doing his thing. Colt Emerson's getting more love than Weatherholt right now, which is deserved. Emerson's awesome too, but Weatherholt has a job, is my point. Like, these other guys, we don't even know if they're starting with the team.
True.
And that comes a little surprising to me also. All right. I guess my first one, this is a kind of young versus old situation here. Two first basemen. You got Sal Stewart at 201, Christian Walker at 205. Sal Stewart, I guess the big question is, does he play? Is what's going on? And it seems like he's going to. Tito Francona can't rave about him enough. They're even trying him out at second base at times in spring just to have the flexibility there. But he's primarily going to be a first baseman, as they said, play some DH when Eugenio sits. But we've talked about the power, even the speed. He had 17 steals in the minors last year. Maybe I'm missing it. It feels like that doesn't get talked about enough. We're just here now with this guy that hits the ball a million miles an hour. He runs, and he hits for average in the minors. Like, these are all things that are pretty darn impressive with Sal Stewart. So a massive ceiling with Sal Stewart. But then there's, you know, if you just like your old reliables, there's Christian Walker, who's coming off a down season for some, because he had 238. We talked about him a lot in the first base preview, but still had 27 home runs, still played 154 games. Babbitt was, you know, in line with things. It was just a rough start to the season. He actually finished decently.
Yeah.
So if Christian Walker can resort back to the Christian Walker of old, where he used to hit like 250 to 260 and hit you 25 to 35 home runs and drive in and score almost 200 runs in RBIs, that's a heck of a player at this ADP. So which one do you like here? Because I lean Stewart for the ceiling, but I have zero problem with Christian Walker.
Yeah, I get Stewart. I'm going to go Walker. Maybe shocker alert for everyone. I'll take the old guy. But like, I still think Christian Walker is still good.
Yeah.
Like, it was just a horrible first half on a new team, new contract with Houston last year. Second half hit 264, 17 homers, 14% barrel rate. Like, the power is still there. I think the playing time's safe. We've got a question in the chat about Isak Paredes, but I think the playing time with Christian Walker is safe. Certainly, I think safer than with Sal Stewart, where if you've got a month-long slump with Sal Stewart, there's a chance he's not starting or maybe goes back to the minors. So that's what kind of worries me. So I'm going to go Christian Walker. Might depend on the ultimate cop-out, right? How I built my team, whatever. Maybe in a 12-teamer, I go Sal Stewart, just shoot for the ceiling there. But I think Christian Walker is a really good buy at 205. Someone who has a good projection for that price. I would take he's projected for to hit 229.
Take the over
on that. It's been 258, 251, 238 the last three seasons. So I don't think the batting average is going to crush you. And I think you've still got, honestly, mid-30s home run power here.
Yeah, I'll add one. I don't disagree. I think Walker's totally fine. If you don't want to take the risk with Stewart, that's fine. I just want to mention for people that are looking at the projections, just remember Stewart's primarily projected for like 118 games.
Yeah, it's a
playing
time hit.
Yeah. Yep. Up to like at least 140. Now you're in the mid-20s, almost 15 steals. Like, things look pretty good with that stat line. So just keep that in mind as well.
Agreed.
All right. What's your next menage a trois?
My next one is the volume guys. So I mentioned this
with this is your guys. Let's not even call it.
The volume. This you is like, you're having like a menage a trois with your guys. These are my kids. Yeah. You're going to make me choose between Aaron Nola and Jack Flaherty live on the show.
You put this on the sheet, not me.
What kind of sick and twisted topic is this? But that's my, I don't know. That's my debate is you've got maybe four starting pitchers. You're looking at your SP five or six or something. You've taken an early, maybe Hunter Green or Cole Reagans or something that, you know, maybe isn't the safest from an injury standpoint. You need someone who's going to get you volume, and sitting here is Aaron Nola, Jack Flaherty and Zach Gallen. I honestly, I don't have a firm like take between these three. How the hell do I even have them ranked? Let me go to the draft kit, see what I even remember here.
Let's make sure you get this right.
Yeah, I don't want to be.
When the custody battle comes out, we got to have these answers proper.
Gallen, I've got ranked the three of us, me, you, and Martin Sokolsky have Zach Gallen at 56. We've got Aaron Nola at 56, right next to him.
Wow. Wow.
And that's with my ranking of Nola at 40, and you guys are in the 60s.
We brought it back to reality. Okay.
And Jack Flaherty, we have ranked as pitcher 41.
So we like Captain Jack.
I've got Flaherty 33rd. Martin has him 39th, and you've got Flaherty 52. So again, these rankings, which we just updated this week, are also available on the Patreon. So if I'm going by my own rankings, and I think this is right, I would rank them Flaherty, Nola, Gallen. But if you want to go Gallen over Nola, I get it too. But it's just an interesting, like if you're looking for someone to get innings, to eat innings on your team, you're trying to avoid the like 180 innings of a 5 ERA again, like you got with Nola last year. But yeah, I think I take Flaherty over Nola, and I have a lot more shares of Flaherty than I do Nola. The ADPs, I should have mentioned this at the top, Nola 211, Jack Flaherty 224, Zach Gallen 229.
Yeah, this is interesting because so I have it for personally, it's Flaherty 52, Gallen 53, Nola 66. So I guess that answers your question on how I go about it. But it's kind of if you want to talk ceilings again, like Flaherty, I think is really good. We've had this discussion many times, kind of underachieved. Like he should have pitched better than the outcomes, essentially. Gallen's a guy that was so bad last year, but I think there's still something there, weirdly enough, to like get back to that, you know, top of the rotation pitcher, where this is where you can take that advantage. Where Nola, I think we know who Nola is.
Like, I'm not.
If you just want a floor for Nola, fine. But that's why he's so far down from me. Like Flaherty, I could see a boost. That's why even his projections better. His projections below a 4 ERA with 175 Ks, and I believe the strikeouts for sure. Like I really like those. So that's why I have Gallen and Flaherty right next to each other. But I'll take Gallen just for the upside play there, but I have zero. I like Flaherty, and I'm not touching Aaron Nola.
Shocker.
Yes, I know. All right, my second ADP debate is a little Gigante Red Sox battle here. Elliot Ramos at 221, Willier Abreu at 224. Now, I wanted to bring this up because Ramos, we've talked about quite a bit. I feel like it's a tale of two seasons for Ramos, like pretty aggressive, lots of power his first go around in 2024, more patient, less power, but still very good. Like the end of the season, it was 256, 21 and 6. Like it's not a bad stat line. Just the expectations were much higher for Elliot Ramos, and he's still going to probably hit towards the top of the order and get on base a lot and see where it goes there. Then you got Willier Abreu, who we were always worried about platoons. And as of now, they're saying there is no real platoon with Abreu. And in 115 games last year, we saw 22 home runs, 6 steals, and at 247. So it appears he would have more power than Elliot Ramos, maybe a little more speed than Elliot Ramos, especially if he plays every single day. But we actually saw Ramos play every single day last year. That's the difference for me. So we kind of have an idea. And do you think he reverts back to his 2024 form? There's a lot of what-ifs between the two is my point. Like, I think we know Ramos's floor is still very good. We haven't seen a full season floor to base Abreu off of, if that makes sense. So it's like a ceiling versus floor play. I've been leaning towards Ramos, but I think I need to start buying into Abreu a little more. I'm still picking Ramos, but Abreu is starting to become more and more enticing to me.
I think I'll take Abreu just for the, yeah, the appeal of potentially playing every single day. Because he wasn't, like, terrible against lefties. I don't know how many plate appearances he had last year against him, but it was a better than league average strikeout rate, a 676 OPS. Like, that's not horrible. 85 WRC plus.
Let me help you real quick. He had 349 plate appearances versus righties, 68 versus lefties.
Okay. So small sample alert, yeah. But at least what did not look overmatched against lefties with a 9% walk rate and a 21% K. Like that's not bad to the point where, like, I think the Red Sox should probably try and find out, you know, if Willy Abreu can actually hit lefties. This is age 26 season. So I just feel like Elliot Ramos is like, he is the kind of the ultimate Bloom pick. Like I don't think the ceiling's very high with Elliot Ramos. The appeal is everyday playing time with decent skills. I just think Willy Abreu has a level that Elliot Ramos does not have if things break well.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. That's kind of, like I said, do you want the floor or do you want the ceiling play? I think Abreu's ceiling is pretty good. So I'm with you there. Maybe I should change my tune a bit, but I still think Elliot, we haven't seen the most of him yet either. I think we saw a really good breakout, and last year was kind of more of a cautious approach. I'm wondering if we get back to that. Let's get after it, especially after going and spending time with a lot of veteran Dominican players here. I know people might laugh at my thought process there, but for a young guy to go get put in that atmosphere for a few weeks, that's not going to suck. I'll say that much.
Yeah. I mean, last year was pretty disappointing for Ramos.
Yeah, it was. It would, like, the end of season stat line you could live with, but it wasn't what you drafted him for at all. So that was a bummer. All right, let's get to some targets in this range. We have no fades. If we get this late in the game, you're really not fading anything. It's time to get aggressive. It's time to target some guys. And to the shock of zero people in this room, Ryan's first target
literally has the substring olds in his last name.
Like, we could legit, like, stop the show for 2 minutes and just have people write comments in who you think it is, and like 90% of them would probably get it, but we won't do that. But sorry to interrupt you. This is how obvious this is.
But the guy's not even old. It's an age 31 season. I probably know who it is, but I'll keep down this path.
Keep doing it.
It's an age 31 season. Had a down, coming off an admittedly down season. That happens. We have bad years. Before that, from 21 through 24, this player hit 24 plus home runs every season, 600 plus plate appearances every season, 260 plus batting average every season, double digit bags in the last two seasons. It's Brian Reynolds. I think you're getting him at a awesome discount at pick, whatever he's going at. It's in my other tab. Is he near the top of this? I don't know. Wherever the hell he's going, he's a good buy. Just because I think this is someone who has consistently been good for a long time. I think the Pirates are going to be half decent this year. I think it's just the ultimate play of buying someone coming off a down year who isn't in the decline phase of his career yet at age 31 season. So Brian Reynolds is my pick. I've taken a bunch of Brian Reynolds and I feel pretty good about it. ADP 208.
Yep. 208. I don't hate it. I like him in a underdog, especially just because it is a heck of a floor play in the outfield and he's still cheap there. All right, mine. I told Ryan when he sent this over, because he usually puts his
name down. Reserved it.
He puts his names down early, and I'm like, I should have reserved a pitcher too, apparently, but we're going to reserve the hitter. And I even teased it last episode when everybody kept saying, where's the Big Oak? Where's the Big Oak? Because Murakami was on last week's, or on Tuesday, said, don't you worry, we'll discuss the Big Oak on Thursday evening. And that is one and only, it's just Big Oak, it's Kazuma Okamoto of the Toronto Blue Jays. ADP of 232. Yeah, 232. Yep. Coming over from Japan, of course. And this guy has just been, Murakami's getting all the loving because he's younger and has, you know, his fair share of pop. What Okamoto does, the dude has hit over 30 home runs in all but two seasons. He's hit 27 or more in all but last year, where he only played 69 games with injuries, hit 15 still. So it's been 27 or more home runs from 2018 to 2024. Not bad. What I love about him, though, is he's basically hit like 270 to 285-ish throughout the entire time, where Okamoto or Murakami goes up and down. And Okamoto has great plate discipline. It basically walks over 10% of the time, strikes out like 16, 17% of the time. This is a hitter, folks, like a professional hitter. I know it was in Japan, so there might be growing pains. All the things people want to say, I get it. And it's a small sample, but the dude's already got a home run hitting 333 in 7 plate appearances, and he should have had a second one already. Like, dude's hitting the ball hard and loving life. I just love the price tag. I think it's a phenomenal price tag. If you wait on third base, it's cheap as heck. If you want a corner infielder, very, very affordable. I like both a lot in that regard. And like, just for another, you know, S&G situation here, I like him in auctions a lot because his AAV is $6, but he's gone as low as 3. It's kind of steadying out at 6 to 7 now, I think, once he started hitting in spring. But to me, he could take your Royce Lewis spot pretty quickly and run with it. My biggest concern was how much would he play when he got signed, because originally it was utility. He's pretty much locked into third base. And the fact the price is still down here surprises me. That will change. So get the big oak while you can.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is the playing time looks somewhat safe, especially if he keeps, I mean, it's been like 2 games in spring training, so who the hell knows, but certainly seems like he has the job, whereas before that wasn't a guarantee. And obviously the natural intuition is compare Okamoto to Murakami. I feel like the Murakami floor with the swing and miss is pretty scary. So I'll take the guy with the better hit tool, the better batting average skills, and see where it gets us. I have been ending up with Caleb Durbin in a bunch more drafts just because he's the next third baseman. So I don't have a whole lot of Okamoto, but I understand why. And the price has gone up a little bit. The last week of drafts, it's been like 215 roughly. So going up a little bit, but not still pretty cheap.
Yep. Pretty cheap for, I think, the average power you're going to get out of him. So bring it on.
Yep.
All right. Who's your next big guy?
He is a big guy. It's going to be Jack Kags. This is one I am usually a projections drafter. The projections, as I mentioned, with Jack Caglione are terrible because the results were absolutely terrible last season. Jack Kags hit 157, which is less than the amount of money I spent on him in Fab in pretty much all my leagues last year, with 7 home runs, 18 RBI, and 232 plate appearances. Like, truly awful stuff. But I'm gonna bank that the skills play out. It was a league average K rate. It was excellent power. It was a 12% barrel rate. Max EV 114. Like, this guy hits the hell out. He hit a ball 120 today. I don't know off who in spring training, but just the pure ability to hit a baseball 120 miles an hour is extremely rare. I honestly don't care who it's off of. So Jack Kags is just one of those. Like, I could see Jack Caglione. This is probably way too bold, but like, I mean, I made the Kurtz comp all Fab last year. It's like, why can't he put together a Nick Kurtz type of season this year? Why can't that's very optimistic, but fence is moving in. He has the job. Why not? And again, you're trying to win these leagues in the middle round and hit on these breakout guys. Caglione at 210 is just like, when he's going in between Sal Frelick and Dalton Varsho, it's like, come on, take your shot on Jack Kags. And if it doesn't work, you know, find me at my house and throw stuff at me.
That's a bold strategy, Cotton. I love it because, like you said, at this point in the draft, this is a 30-plus home run guy or a triple A. Either way, you're going to be easy. You're going to drop him or you're going to just flourish it. I don't feel you're getting a middle result with him. He's either going to just be a monster or he's not going to be worth a roster spot on your team. So I think it's a great chance to take. And I lean towards the monster as you do. He's young. He's got his cup of coffee.
Yep.
Like, I feel this is where you see these second year players. We talked about, like, this was like Jaren Duran a couple of years ago. There's so many guys that do. I wrote an article a couple of years ago. Maybe I'll have to bring that one back. Was sophomore player. Like, I do the podcast with James Anderson every year. Sophomore players, yeah. We talk about them. So, like, these are dudes that I think are worth targeting, especially when their ADP takes a hit like this. Like, this is where you gulp it up. So, I fully endorse this. Kind of a sophomore player here is my guy here, which I know you are slowly coming around on, I think, when we talk about him. And that's Jordan Beck. Jordan Beck at ADP 237. Like, we love Brenton Doyle, but I keep saying, why draft Brenton Doyle when you can get Jordan Beck, like, you know, 70 picks later?
Or why draft Brenton Doyle when he has one functioning wrist?
True, true. This, the joke was funnier 24 hours ago. But, like, Jordan Beck, I think people kind of wrote him off after that bad 2024, and it was bad, really bad. But last year, the dude played in 148 games with the Rockies, 16 home runs, 19 steals, and at 258. I have a hunch if you went into any bar not in Denver, Colorado, most people would think he was garbage and probably didn't play the entire season with the Rockies. Like, that's actually a really – if he gave me that stat line right now at that ADP, I'd be totally cool with what took place right now. And I think there's another level to Jordan Beck. We've dug into him quite a bit at other shows. Like, we saw his barrel rate increased almost 10%, 9.5%. Hard hit rate still 36.4, which is not ideal, but he hit the ball almost 114 miles an hour. Again, to your point, you know, it was not 120, but he's proven he can hit the snot out of a baseball. He hits the ball on the ground a lot. That's a bugaboo. 43% ground ball rate, only 36% fly ball rate. That'd be nice if that shifted a bit. That would obviously help things a lot. But this is a ball player, but that's why his BABIP's high also, is what I'll say.
Right.
But this is a guy that, you know, in the minors was hitting, you know, 290, 300s throughout the minors. He went 25-20 in 2023 throughout the minors. Like, it's not like this is a complete fluke with who he is. This is a skill set. This is a guy that they thought would be really good out of the minors, and he sucked his first go-around. And then his second go-around, we saw a little better. So this is not his sophomore. This is his junior year. But this is another guy that I think this is a 2020 guy. This is a Brenton Doyle-type player. Doyle, I think, still has probably a better ceiling than Jordan Beck. That's why he's going higher. But I don't think there's that big of a gap between the two.
Yeah, I hear you on the 2020. I worry it could come with like a 220, 230 batting average is my thing. I know Jordan Beck hit 258 last year. I can't see the projection. My eyes are just like dying at this point. But
it's 251.
251.
I'll take it right now.
I'd probably take the under on that given a 30% strikeout rate. That's pretty high, but who knows? Jordan Beck could be one of those guys that just holds a good BABIP and can kind of make it work with a 30% K rate. That, I mean, there are players that can do that. I would just highlight the batting average risk. But again, I'm not going to poke too many holes in your guy here. I mean, the price is really good. And if you're speculating on ceiling, like, yeah, this makes a lot of sense.
All right, tell us
after I bag him the entire time.
It makes a lot of sense now. I get it. Full endorse, full send. All right, tell us about the best pitcher in this range.
The best pitcher in this range, despite having an ERA of 4.87 and a WHIP of 1.33 last year, was Shane Baz. Gets out of the bandbox that was Steinbrenner last year. Goes to Baltimore. It's just, this is pure skills, and don't look at ERA and WHIP, the surface stats. Shane Baz was extremely unlucky last year. Very elevated homer to fly ball rate. Again, that park doesn't help. But you look at kind of the underlying skills, 16% K-minus walk. That jumped to 18% in the second half last year. So that's well above average. Plenty of whiffs, plenty of strikes. Velocity looked good at 97. Biggest thing through 166 innings last year. Shane Baz has had his share of injuries throughout his career, but tons of talent. Finally avoided the injury bug, and I think is going to a Baltimore team that could be really good this year. In the baseball forecaster, we threw an upside of a 3.25 ERA on Shane Baz, and again, that's kind of, well, that's what I put because I wrote his forecaster box. Apparently, that's what I put, and I think he's good enough. If things break right, he could go from a 4.87 ERA down to a low threes, and at pick 200, it's like that's. I took him in labor mix around Monday, and did not hesitate at that price.
Yep, you shouldn't. Baz is a very popular target for me. Whenever I can get him, it's not always possible because I talk too much on this microphone about him. But I do like Shane Baz quite a bit. You mentioned kind of a joke about just ignore his numbers last year. Well, I'll give you a number that if people want to look at. And again, home road splits aren't, you know, one and the same, but Steinbrenner was a bad place. At Steinbrenner, he had a 5.90 ERA on the road, 3.86. Like, that says a lot to the caliber of pitcher he is where I'll go with that. At home, though, he had a Steinbrenner 17% K to walk on the road, about 15%. But the home run, it was 1.97 home runs per nine at home, 0.86 on the road. So it's pretty easy to see where things went right and wrong with Shane Boz. Like, it almost feels like he was trying to pitch to more contact on the road, knowing it's not going to fly over a fence and be a problem. So we'll, I think going to Baltimore is obviously a win in this conversation. So love Shane Boz. Just want to add a little extra context to that one. All right, for me, I'll pick Dalen Lyle. It's a guy that I really, really like. I somehow don't have a ton of shares of because I think I've taken Shane Boz around this time, or I, you know, dance with, you know, the Stewarts of the world or something like that. But I do like it. I think it's a very, very floor profile. I don't know if the ceiling is quite there. Like, we saw 9 home runs last year. Throughout the minors, the most he had in the season was 9, but the steals are legit. He's got tons of speed throughout the minors. And one thing I'm curious to see this year is, you know, the projections haven't hit in 265-ish, give or take. Was throughout the minors in his first 2 years, because he came up when he was 18 years old, he hit anywhere between like 270 to 290. But all of last year, at age 22 season, from AA, AAA, and the bigs, it was 319, 337, and 299. So I'm wondering if there was a legit approach change at the plate. Even at the big league level, only a 16% strikeout rate, which I think is tremendous for a 22-year-old ball player. I just don't know how much power is actually there with Dalen Lyle. That's my biggest concern with him. That's what's kind of kept me off of going all in on Dalen Lyle. But the speed I like, yeah. I think the average will be respectable. And if he can tap into 15 home runs, I think that's tremendous. I just don't know if he can just yet. Kind of want to see it. But I do like him a lot if you want a floor guy in a deeper format. At 12, probably go elsewhere. But in a 15, I could see some nice appeal there.
Right, because playing time should be very safe, I would think, for Dalen Lyle.
So. Yes.
Agree on the power concern. That's my biggest thing, because not only was it a below average barrel rate last year in the majors at 5%, it was only, we have a little bit of a AAA sample, it was only 6.5% in AAA. Over 119 plate appearances last year for Dalen Lyle. So hasn't really hit for a ton of power, at least that StatCast can measure. But I think the batting average upside is there. The stolen bases are there. 8 for 14 on the base paths last year for the Nats.
We know the Nats will just run. They know the Nats run, man. The Nats just run, though.
They'll probably just run them anyway, but the Nats don't care this year.
It'll be like the Randy Arozarena from a couple of years ago. He's going to like have 30 steals and 55 attempts or whatever it was. Like,
just the Nats don't have a rotation this year. They could give two craps about it. So that helps. I mean, honestly, that's a thing in fantasy. So, yeah, I like it.
All right, who's your last target in this range? Another old.
Matthew Boyd. Going to go with Matthew Boyd. I just think Matthew Boyd was really good for a lot of last season and just kind of wore down the stretch. This is someone who had not pitched over 80 innings, minors, majors combined since before COVID times, and spiked to 180 last year. And kind of predictably, September was pretty rough for Matthew Boyd. So I don't think, certainly he's not as good as, you know, what we saw in the first half, which was a 2.65 ERA, 1.10 WHIP from Matthew Boyd. But can he settle as a mid-3s ERA guy with decent Ks, good volume on a good team, probably get some wins? Yeah. And I think given the state of some of the other pitchers in this group, I think overall that's a combination that it's not going to be your breakout guy or whatever, but I think you can rely on Matthew Boyd for a good 3-4 months plus of this season and be good to go there. So Matthew Boyd at pick 236. It's funny, like, he's going right after Roki Sasaki and Bryce Miller. Like, it's, I don't know, just totally different profiles and types of pitchers you want to take there. But I'm going to go Boyd.
Yep. I've actually said it on like streams and or in our Discord for sure. In the Fab Leagues, I'm much more inclined to take shots at Matthew Boyd here at 236, because the biggest thing in DC is I was worried about volume. How many innings does he pitch? Because that jump last year, I think, scared both of us. We talked about, like, what do we get out of Matt Boyd? But now if I can take him and give me 50, give me 100, give me whatever you're going to give me, maybe you run hot and you pitch a whole season again. Who knows? But if I can get like 100 innings out of Matt Boyd, I feel like I achieved something in this range. And I'm pretty, like, compared to the other pitchers in this range, I think 100 Matt Boyd innings would be pretty good. So I'll take him. I'll move on. It's kind of like what we started out when you asked, do you take your risks or whatever? This is where I am. I'm taking a Matt Boyd risk, which I usually never would have taken in the past. Like, I'll take the risk here and see where it goes.
Yep.
So, all right. For me, the last one I have is Jack Leiter. This is a total ceiling play. Kind of hinted at him earlier, but a couple things. We saw him throw 151 big league innings last year with a 3.86 ERA, which I thought was tremendous. Yes, the Sierra was 4.43, but I'll still take the bump there. We saw a 23% K rate, the 10.4% walk, not great, but that has always been an issue with Jack Leiter as well. We saw 148 strikeouts, which I like to see almost a K per inning there, but I love to see him actually pitch a full season. And we talked about it. It's been well documented. There were some significant improvements in the second half. We got a 3.28 ERA in the second half of the season compared to 4.37 in the first half. So he got better as the season went along. He had in the second half of the season a 17% K to walk. He had a 9% K to walk in the first half. That is a dramatic change, folks. Dramatic change. When all, like a 26.3% K rate in the second half. So growth, he's young. I think there's another level here. The Texas rotation's garbage, so he's not going anywhere. There's just a lot, like a ceiling to Leiter. If we see the second half pitcher the entire season, you're still getting a great deal here. What's to say a 26-year-old can't improve even more? He was the former, like, I think he was a top pick in that draft, if I remember correctly. Yeah, he's a number two overall pick in 2021 out of Vanderbilt. So there's quote-unquote pedigree here, folks, and I think we might be tapping into that finally. At his age 25 season, now he's heading to 26. At ADP 239, I'll take Jack Leiter all day long.
Pitch mix driven too, that second half improvement. I wrote a speculator column for HQ a couple weeks ago looking at first, second half pitch mix changes, and Jack Leiter was the cover boy of said column. More changeups, more four-seamers in the second half to kind of drive all those improvements that you just talked about. I think one other thing I would add is Texas. You mentioned he's safe in the rotation. Not only is he safe in the rotation, Texas is an elite pitcher's park, has been the last couple of years, and that's going to help Jack Leiter too. So I took Jack Leiter in labor mixed on Monday. So that's my endorsement, I guess.
All right, final thoughts on this pocket. We got a couple listener questions in the Discord.
Not really. I mean, yeah, you can tell it's a precipitous decline from the previous pocket, as it should be. I think this is, though, you know, this is where you want to, this is the part of the draft where you want to kind of shoot for a little bit more upside and get a bit look more loose with the wrists and try and get those game changers. And there are plenty of at least candidates for that, who they actually are by the end of the season. We made it this far in the podcast, and I'll say our guess is as good as yours.
Yep. Yeah, it's just wait till next Thursday's show, because Tuesday we'll be stringing the Tout live draft at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific time, right here on your favorite YouTube channel. A couple questions out of the Discord. Dustin Anderson wants to know, when will Ryan get a new camera that does not think for itself?
I don't know, man. This thing's freaking me out. It honestly does. So when we end a show, I walk out of the room. The camera stays on for like a couple more minutes and it follows me out the room. So when I come back in the next day or whatever, or like an hour later, the camera's pointed at the door.
That is terrifying.
This is freaking weird.
That is terrifying.
So I don't know, man. I got this thing and I think Black Friday.
The robots are taking over.
It's a good camera. I like it, but
yeah,
a little shaky.
Yes, definitely. Smokey Joe says Durbin versus Okamoto versus Murakami.
You answer that. I'm screwing with my camera.
Yeah, I got Okamoto versus Murakami versus Durbin. If you need steals, I go Okamoto, Durbin, Murakami, but it's the big Oak is the moral of the story there.
It's Durbin for me, then Okamoto, and then Murakami.
Oh my gosh, just give it a pinch, Ryan. On that note, we're gonna wrap it up there. Pocket four in the books again, pocket five next Thursday. ADP's 250 to 300, maybe some late post 300 thoughts as well, as we usually do on that show. But a friendly reminder, next Tuesday, March 3rd, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, maybe slightly before, just to get some banter going. Tout mixed draft. Ryan and I will both be drafting. I'm drafting 5th. Ryan's drafting 14th. You can catch it right here, as usual, each and every year on this YouTube channel. So make sure you tune in, share the word, tell your friends. Let's hang out. Watch Ryan and I duke it out. Any final thoughts other than that?
Look forward to entering the arena with you, my friend. See you then.
Yes. See you then as well. But until then, make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Intrick. And until next time, this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 324. Catch y'all next time. Thank you.